You're listening to Issues and Ideas on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Jordan Bell. The 2016 race is picking up locally and nationally as many candidates running for the Central Coast 24th District congressional seat are filing over the next few weeks to officially be on the primary ballot. And on a national scale, we're starting to see the race shape up. The number of GOP candidates is slowly shrinking, and among both parties, we're starting to hear more talk about who is fit to be in office. Joining us today is historian and author Nancy L. Cohen. She's written extensively about American politics, and she's asking a lofty question. Why haven't we had a woman president of the United States? Her latest book is called Breakthrough: The Making of America's First Woman President. Welcome to Issues and Ideas, Nancy.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, your book, Breakthrough, The Making of America's First Woman President, questions why a woman has yet to serve in the Oval Office and whether a woman can win a U.S. presidential election. You've spent years interviewing women, girls, politicians, political scientists, and members of the public on this subject. What did you find?
I started thinking about this book right after the 2012 election, when it looked pretty clear that at least one woman would be running for president in either party or both parties. And so, as you said, I started asking these questions. Was America ready? Were the old barriers still too high? And one big question popped out of me as I started doing the research, and that was why the United States hadn't ever elected a woman president when so many other nations had. You know, more than 50 nations have elected women to lead them. Germany, Brazil, Taiwan, Philippines, the list goes on. We're behind Kosovo and Bangladesh. Americans like to think of ourselves as exceptional, you know, as a model of democracy for the world. But in this case of women's political leadership, we're exceptionally backward. So as a woman who has written about politics for a long time, and also as a mother of two daughters, I wanted to know what was holding us back.
And what's sort of striking listening to the countries you just listed is the U.S. would be considered more socially progressive than some of those countries. And yet we still haven't found ourselves in the position of having a woman in the Oval Office.
Right, exactly. So that raises the question, are we just more sexist than these other countries that we would think are really far behind on women's rights and equality? And the surprising news, I think, really surprised me as I was researching this book, is the good news is that today in 2016, sexism is not stopping women from winning elections. And, you know, we know that women in politics, like women everywhere, face acts of everyday sexism over and over. You know, the attacks on Hillary Clinton recently have been outrageous. And they're also laughable. I mean, Sanders and Trump have been shouting at American voters for 9 months now, but Hillary is the one who's shrill and unlikable if she raises her voice to be heard at a rally. So I think we have to, you know, call out the sexism in politics, the way that attacks on women candidates are often very gendered, you know, taking account of their clothes or their hair or their voice, those kind of things. But the really good news is that voters aren't voting on the basis of a double standard. They care more about party and ideology and things of that sort than they care about a voter, about a candidate's gender.
Now, you write that sexism will not get us very far in understanding the current landscape for women in politics. Can you explain what you mean by that? And also, what is the current landscape of sexism in America?
Great question. So there's no question that sexism and outright discrimination kept a woman out of the Oval Office for more than 200 years. There's no question that sexism and legal discrimination kept women out of most political offices through much of our history. You know, so things started to change in the 70s as a group of pioneers really kind of looked at the old boys club and they said, you know, how do we get in here? How do we get women a place at the table? And they started creating their own networks and institutions. You know, and those stories that they told me are really fascinating and great to hear. It's women really learning how to play the political game in a way that men have played it for years so that women can get equal representation there. So America is, our politics are, the way we do elections is very different than a lot of other countries. And one of the big problems for women in politics, the reason why we're really so far behind, has a lot to do with incumbency and kind of the quirks of how we do elections. So I really don't think that voters hold any bias against electing women to office anymore. It's just that there are not many openings for the women who are qualified, who don't hold office already, to run for.
I want to talk a little bit more about Hillary Clinton, as she's now the only woman left in the presidential race. Now, are there any sorts of criticism and questioning that Hillary Clinton blatantly faces because of her gender? And is this also a result of the media asking the same sorts of questions that they've asked for years and years, when it's always been a majority male candidates?
Yeah, you know, there's some really interesting research about how the media treats women. And certainly when you read things, you can pick out stories about her clothes and her hair and her voice. But there have been some studies that show that if you actually compare the coverage of men and women candidates, they get kind of equal amounts of coverage of their personalities or their attractiveness, those kind of things. So looking at it broadly, women aren't covered differently by the media. Hillary Clinton is a bit of a special case, of course, because she's been so prominent for so long. And I think for her, one of the things we have to remember is that she was the person who absorbed a lot of the really, really ugly sexism when women were first starting to come into politics in the 80s and 90s. So a lot of the attacks that people make on her are echoing those really ugly anti-feminist attacks of the 90s, and some people don't even realize that that's what's going on, that that's the history that she brings with her.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Nancy L. Cohen. She's out with a new book called Breakthrough, The Making of America's First Woman President, about what it may take to elect a woman to serve as America's Commander-in-Chief. Now, Nancy, can you talk about women as voters, how they usually vote, and what voter turnout is like amongst women?
Women tend overwhelmingly to support Democrats. It's about, national level, about 55 to 57%. And women also turn out in much larger numbers than men do. In the last presidential election, there were about 10 million more women in the electorate than men. So women have a pro-Democratic Party leaning, in large part because the Democratic Party represents the issues that they care about: women's reproductive rights, equal pay, what you would call basically a progressive agenda on women's issues and family issues is something that the majority of American women support. We saw it in the Nevada caucus with Hillary Clinton, where there was a huge gender gap among Democrats. Hillary won 57% of the women's vote, but only in the mid-40s on the men's vote.
How is it that having women on a ballot, women on a ticket, how does it affect other women lower down the ticket when there are women at the top or not at the top?
You know, it's likely that women at the top of a party ticket help women who are lower down on the ticket, because what happens is that kind of the questions about women's leadership and the questions about how women govern differently and how women have different priorities in governing get raised in the campaign. And, you know, we know it's always harder for lower-level candidates, you know, for Congress or city council or things like that, it's much harder to get press attention. And so that prominence, particularly if it's the top of the ticket at the presidential level, really will help to gain attention for that woman candidate.
I want to zero in on our local elections here on the Central Coast. Right now, we are in the middle of our 24th district congressional race. We have a ton of candidates vying for Representative Lois Capp's position when she retires. Now, she has been in office for over 18 years, so nearly a couple decades now, and she's served in that position as a Democrat for longer than any other Democrat has. Now, how may having a woman in office for a significant amount of time affect voters when that seat is up?
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. So there's some fascinating studies that show that when you have women in particular offices, women voters and also men get acclimated to a woman being in that position. There's strong role model effects that when there are viable women candidates or viable women leaders in office, that young girls, teenagers, show a much higher interest in politics and a higher propensity to get involved in politics when they're older. So it really does matter seeing these models of what can be done. Does it mean that a woman is going to win that seat after a woman retires from it? Absolutely not. But it does mean that women are getting a very, very serious look from the voters. And, you know, for the minority of people that do care about America's gross gender gap in political representation. I mean, there are only 19% of our Congress are women. For those people, it may make them likely to say, all things being equal, we'll vote for a woman to replace a woman.
Right, right. And in your research, I'm wondering, what do you find it is that women, well, what do you find it is that a woman could bring to the executive branch? And for example, like, do women tend to work across party lines more, among other things?
Yes. So I think there are three big things that women bring to executive office or really any office of political leadership. It's a different style. It's the symbolism in that women are equal and capable of leadership. I think when we're talking about the presidential level, that the most powerful nation in the world could elect a woman president sends a huge message to a world where, frankly, people are ISIS, Boko Haram, are enslaving and executing women for just being women, right? And then they do. The evidence is really strong, and the stories are really compelling about how women do work across party lines, that they're more likely to collaborate with each other, more likely to try to find pragmatic solutions. And I think this comes from the fact that women still are, in many ways, outsiders in our politics, and they want to be effective. They're trying to get things done, so they look to new allies who are often other women across the aisle to get things done. And we do see, as I said, that women look at the issues that affect women and children particularly and say, you know, we can't keep these on the back burner forever. We have huge gaps in our country. You know, we've made a lot of progress, but, you know, we rank 75th in the world on the gender wage gap, for example. So women are more likely to say, this is important, and it's the 21st century, and we're going to make some progress for women, too. We're not just going to wait till all the important stuff gets done. Women are important, too.
You alluded earlier to incumbency being one of the main things that define how elections play out. I'm wondering what it will take for the United States to elect a woman president, and if there's anything truthful to the notion that the longer a woman isn't in office, the harder it becomes for her to be elected?
It's hard to say. As I was interviewing people, I heard a lot of the first woman president has to be a superwoman. And, you know, for better or worse, the woman who now looks most likely to be the nominee of the Democratic Party and have at least a strong shot at the presidency, you know, is in fact a superwoman. If you look at her resume, Secretary of State, Senator, First Lady, you know, the list of her accomplishments are really quite impressive. And there hasn't been a male candidate for president in decades that has the same, you know, qualifications on paper. You know, it would have been interesting to see if Hillary Clinton hadn't run, what some of these other women who are coming up, whether they could have been viable. You know, there are a lot of Democratic and Republican women senators and governors who could have made a compelling shot at the presidency. So on whether any woman could be elected president who has the right qualifications, I think the good news is that we're farther along than we think. We are ready to elect a qualified woman. And although any woman who runs for president is going to be attacked in gendered ways, I think Americans give women just about the same look that they give men these days.
Nancy Cohen, thank you so much for joining us today on Issues and Ideas.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Nancy Cohen is out with a new book called Breakthrough, The Making of America's First Woman President, about what it may take to elect a woman to serve as America's Commander-in-Chief. You're listening to Issues and Ideas on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Jordan Bell.